Okay, so we're going to talk about keeping deals together. We're going to first talk about cancellation, what causes deals, real estate deals to cancel, understand a little bit about remorse, and we're going to dig into ways to prevent some of the things that you guys are experiencing and some contract strategies or time savers that may help you in your negotiations when the deals start to unravel. And that will take us right up to 6 o'clock. So let's start with the introduction, which is why we're having the call. As I look at the transactions that we have with Best Choice Realty, and I look at every deal that comes through our office, I personally go through all the files, make sure we have all of the transaction documents that we need, and sometimes you guys will get an email from me saying you're missing this or missing that, and it's because I'm doing what we call risk management, where I go through each transaction file to make sure that you're not missing anything or that there's something that I can do to jump in and help you. And I do that every Tuesday. So tomorrow, it takes me about an hour to go through and assess where all of the transactions are at, and then I email out specific questions or asking for updates to all the agents that have pending transactions looking to close. So as I go through this, what I've identified is that usually 25%, and these seem pretty high, 25% of the deals are at risk of canceling. So although you spend so much time and effort working with your buyers and finding and locating the home and working with them and developing a relationship with them and their family, and then you negotiate and you do such a great job with putting the deal together and getting a good deal with inspection, for some reason, there's still going to be some challenges. And so what we're going to spend some time tonight is talking about those challenges that occur when you do have a deal under contract, when it's signed around, what things can you do as a real estate agent to prevent some of the challenges that occur so that you don't have, you know, 25% of your deals. Sometimes for some of you, you know, if you're only doing 6, 7, 8 deals a month or 6, 7, 8 deals a year, that can be a really big, you know, effect on your income that you make every year. So for some of you that are making 12, 24 deals a year, that can be huge if you think about managing those transactions so that they close effectively. So this is a way to make some more money, add to your bottom line, and really help your business ultimately throughout the rest of your career. So the first thing you need to understand on why these deals sometimes fall apart is remorse, why buyers have remorse, and some ways to prevent that. Understanding remorse is probably the number one reason why a buyer will back out. What will happen sometimes is you'll get them under contract and they'll have second thoughts. Why does that occur? Well, sometimes the buyer's agent or the real estate agent hasn't done a good job. And again, I take it personally. If I was their agent, I would take it personally if I got a phone call and the buyer says, I want to back out of the deal. Because I look back at myself in the mirror and I say to myself, did I not do a good job setting expectations when I first met that buyer? Did I do a good job during that buyer consultation? We talked about buyer consultation a few weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, and there's a lot that goes into that when you're educating the buyer about the process, discussing the properties, how you're going to conduct yourself as an agent in representing them. And it could be as simple as, I didn't do a good job of setting expectations, meaning I didn't explain to them that once we go under contract or once we find that house, that we're going to have some challenges. Setting them up for that is a way that you can basically not overpromise and then underdeliver. That's kind of a common phrase. You want to have a smooth transition, a smooth transaction where your buyers feel confident that you have the professional education to help them through the most challenging transaction that they may do throughout their entire life. And so if you don't set expectations, you don't set them up that, hey, we may run into some difficulties even when you start showing them homes. You know, we need to make sure that we write a contract that has enough time to cover appraisal and inspections. If you haven't done a good job of setting that expectation on the front And then once you're in the transaction and you get a phone call from the lender and the lender says, well, we're going to need an extra week, then your buyer's not mad at you. They're thinking, oh, that's right, Rochelle did tell me that, you know, we may have some challenges along the road because of, you know, delays in appraisal, for example. So setting expectations is super important. I've even set expectations when I'm showing properties. During a good buyer consultation, you may set the expectation that, hey, I usually go out with my clients on three different occasions, and by the third appointment, I usually will help them find a property. And then they understand that Rochelle's not going to go out there 5, 6, 7, 8 times showing them properties. Usually by the third or fourth appointment, we have nailed it down and we know exactly what we're looking for, and we found the property that will work for them, for their family, or for their situation. So setting expectations really goes the distance, and all different types of minimizing remorse and setting up yourself for success. So don't take it lightly when I give you the advice that you should set expectations in your buyer consultation. So then what happens if it's not that? Sometimes the buyers just have remorse. They question their choices. They have doubts about whether they can handle change. And if you don't deal with them, or you deal with the buyer's remorse, it will result in a cancellation. Some of them have doubted whether it's the right time to buy. Maybe your buyers have, you know, written a contract a few weeks ago, and, you know, with the election that came across, maybe they doubt now whether it's the right time to buy. They speculate whether the prices will drop or the interest rates will drop, and so they start to get cold feet or have remorse around the right time to purchase. So don't be shy. When you start to hear clues or you start to feel that maybe they're having those doubts, you don't delay in having those conversations with those people. Sometimes it happens when the buyers have remorse that there's a lack of participation by one or more people that are involved in the decision-making process. I've encountered this many times, and I've heard a lot of other agents encounter this, and this often is the cause of the remorse. What would typically happen, an example of that, is you have been emailing, you've been contacting the wife, for example, and then you find out when you go out to meet with the wife the first time to go look at properties that the husband is actually working in Philadelphia and will also be involved in the purchasing or decision-making process. And so how do you work with that? Are you communicating with both parties? Do you have both email addresses? Do you have both sets of phone numbers so you can communicate with both parties? Have you done a good job at making sure that all the people involved in the decision-making process are involved with your communication and they feel like they are involved with that process? Where I see a lack of that happening is that some of the deals, you guys do a good job of building rapport with one party, and it may not be even, you know, you'll talk with the husband and the wife and go show them a bunch of properties and then all of a sudden get them under contract. And then you find out that grandma or mom has attended the inspection and has basically advised their son or daughter that this property doesn't seem right for you. Or maybe you should consider something else. This doesn't feel right. So all of a sudden you have this unknown entity that comes into the transaction unbeknownst to you, and they basically want to call the shots. And this can really cause some stress in the transaction when this occurs. So if you can sidestep that, if you can identify who's involved, who needs to be at the inspection, who needs to be, you know, communicated with, and at what times and how frequent early on in the transaction, the better your transaction will go. That way you won't have grandma showing up at the property, you know, acting as an inspector for the buyer or the seller. And you'll have the right participation by the people that are involved in making the decision. Also, some things you can do to minimize remorse is you can ask the buyer more questions along the way. When you're in the start of a transaction or when you're approaching the transaction, maybe even when you're early working with them on a buyer consultation, you may want to ask them, you know, why they are planning to buy. And if their answers or their goals or aspirations, if they respond to why they're planning on purchasing, is my parents think it's the time to buy my own place, or my friends just bought a place, that answer could be indicative or a prediction of the cancellation that will happen down the road. If their answers are something like, I've always wanted to own a home, home ownership is really important to our family, my wife and I have put a significant amount of money down or set aside money to make sure that we can buy our next place, or we have done a lot of work to our property to get it presentable so that we can put it on the market when the time is right to sell. Those are some of the answers to the question of why they want to purchase. You can uncover the motivation with answers like that. You can almost predict that the deal will go a lot smoother than somebody who is kind of going at this haphazardly or making things seem like it's not that big of a deal. Buying a property, my brother-in-law said it well. I took it very lightly. I was going through the motions. Obviously, I've done a lot of transactions in my career, but my brother-in-law was buying his first house, and he pulled me aside when we got to the point of the transaction, when we were writing the deal, and he said, Rochelle, you're going about this too fast. You're not explaining things well enough to me. And I wasn't doing a good job at educating him or consulting with him in a way that made sense. And the thing that really hit me the hardest was that he said to me, he goes, Rochelle, I'm paying $250,000. This was like several years ago when he bought his first house. But it hit me because the way he said it, I'm spending $250,000, which, you know, that doesn't sound like, you know, where he was buying and the time he was buying, that was a lot of money to him that he set aside money, you know, hard-earned money that he and his family had set aside. But I was just going through like it was a normal transaction, whether it was $500 or $800,000, I was writing it up and going through the motions. And he says, you need to take it more serious. When you work with your buyers, you need to make sure that you're asking them the questions and explaining the process to them so that they feel like you are taking it seriously. And I think the way he just said $250,000, it hit me. You know, $250,000 doesn't sound as big as $250,000, but when you put it in that type of you know, vantage point from the consumer's standpoint, it made a lot more sense to me, and I started taking my business more seriously, especially at the point when you started to write the transaction and explain the transaction and what was going to take place from the moment they go under contract until they close. Have you done a good job of explaining that process? So don't make the mistake that I did with my brother-in-law. Ways to prevent. Let's jump into that. So how can you prevent remorse from happening? Some remorse happens, you know, just because. The other part that you don't have a lot of control over, but you do have some tips and tricks that we can talk about tonight, is inspections, appraisal, and keeping deals together, things, problems that arise. Number one, inspections. So during the inspection contingency, if you're using a Form 35 in your transaction, which you all should be using, Form 35 is a required form, even if you're waiving the inspection or your buyer chooses to waive, you should always advise your buyer do an inspection. Have you experienced a client who use the inspection to negotiate a ton of repairs? I've encountered this at a lot of times. One of the things you can do when before you hire or before they hire the inspector is you can make sure that they understand what the inspector is going to call out. So you can say, you know, you can hire whatever inspector you choose. I can give you a list of inspectors. How would you like to go about that? But one of the things I like to do when I, you know, confirm the appointment with the buyer to make sure they're going to attend the inspection, I usually like to have my buyers attend the last, you know, hour of the inspection. So if the inspector is going to take 3 hours, I usually like my buyers to attend the last hour. That way they can get the summary or the rundown from the inspector directly on the findings. But before I explain that to them of what their expectations, and I'm going to be there the entire time, the inspector, I've confirmed with him the time, and I've confirmed with the seller the time. The other thing I will mention on the phone when I confirm everything with the buyers is that they're going to probably find quite a few things on this property that may be deficient, may not be something that, and that's just giving the buyer, setting expectations again. It goes back to our first idea of making sure remorse doesn't happen because you didn't do a good job of setting expectations. So when you're setting up the inspection, that's another tip you can use that I've used in my career, is letting them know that, hey, the inspector's going to call out quite a few things. I wouldn't be surprised if the inspector calls out at least 30 to 40 items on this property. Then they are not surprised when the inspector on even a new home comes back with like 25 items that needs to be handled by the builder. So I've used that many times, and it works really well by making sure that the buyer understands that that's what the inspector you're paying for, is the inspector to call out a lot of punch list items. What we will do once the inspector is done and after the end of the inspection is I'll prepare the forms, the paperwork, so that we can negotiate with the seller on things that may be important. And we may need to consider a credit, or we may need to consider them doing some items. So how do you feel about that? And we can have a pre-negotiated kind of way of handling the inspection before we even attend the inspection. This could even be done with when I'm showing properties. As you walk through the property and you become very, very good at looking at the properties, you'll know things that the inspector will typically call out. So you may want to pre-negotiate those things if you're not involved in a multiple offer situation. You may want to negotiate some of those things before you even do the inspection if you're not up against multiple offers. That would be the only caveat. So one of the things that inspectors usually always call out, because they're not trained to really evaluate furnaces, is they usually, in their report, if there's not a sticker on the furnace, the HVAC system, the unit that heats the house, especially in the winter time, they will call out, if there's not a sticker on the outside of it, seller to please hire to seek further investigation from an HVAC specialist to service the furnace and provide buyer with receipt. So what I started to do when I was not involved in a multiple offer situation is I sometimes would write in my contracts, I'd pre-negotiate, and I either ask for a home warranty that covers the furnace, or I may ask the sellers to provide to service the furnace, hire a HVAC specialist to service the furnace, and provide buyer with a clean bill of health prior to closing. And sometimes I would throw that into my contract, and the seller would agree to do it. And that would alleviate the inspector calling it out, and then I have to negotiate that, especially during the winter time. If the service records don't show that the furnace has been serviced in a couple of years, I highly recommend you may ask for that in your contracts or pre-negotiate that with the listing agent. That's an example of something you could do in anticipation of the inspection. Or maybe just asking a simple question with the listing agent. You know, I noticed the roof as we walked through the house looked like it showed quite a bit of wear. How old is the roof? Is it on the disclosure? You know, those types of questions can be dealt with before you even go under contract, before it even becomes an issue. Another thing that comes up on inspections quite a bit is electrical panels. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. And Federal Pacific and Zinsco electrical panels are recalled. So if you know that ahead of time, you may want to talk with the listing agent and find out if the seller had any plans to replace those electrical panels. That way you can anticipate that might be a repair cost that your buyer may have to incur or deal with when they write the offer. So you may want to help the client make an offer that really accounts for the obvious issues based on like a walkthrough that you do or that you stipulate a contingency, obviously, that you're going to do an inspection. And during that inspection contingency, you ask the seller to repair. But sometimes you can negotiate those just by talking with the listing agent and figure out what would be the best approach if the property has been on the market for several months or the property has flipped, meaning the property has come back on the market because of a failed inspection or because the buyer had remorse and the property is now active again, it doesn't hurt to call the listing agent and have a conversation about why that occurred and how we can put your buyer into the property so that that does not occur again. And that makes it a win-win for both us and for the listing agent. The other thing to do when you're talking about inspection is inform the buyer that the inspection report should not really prompt requests for upgrades. There's a nice way of saying this, and I'm not remembering how I said that, but it's not meant to be, you know, like a to-do list or a punch list for the seller to correct all the items on the report. The purpose of the inspection is to identify the condition of the home and to ensure that the condition of the home meets the price that we had negotiated. So if we look at the Form 17, hopefully you've received the Form 17 when you get to this point prior to the inspection, and the Form 17 doesn't reflect some of the things that were called out on the inspection that would detract from the purchasing price that you negotiated, that may prompt you to ask for some repair items to be done by the seller or a price reduction at this point in time. But the inspection should not be used to call out 25 different items. That's not the purpose of the inspection. It should prompt, you know, certain things that will adjust the value of the home or allow for the appraisal to be reflective when the appraiser comes through and things that are hazardous or health-related or that will cause damage to the property over time, those are the things that need to be called out. I see a lot of people trying to negotiate, you know, like for example, a water heater that's working fine. I'd rather see a buyer come to me and say, hey, can you provide me with a home warranty than ask for a brand new water heater when the water heater works fine. But the inspector and the inspector's report, because the water heater is 7 years old, will make a statement in the inspector's report that says that the water heater is at the last, you know, the last part of its cycle. A working water heater that's maintained well can last for many years past the life cycle of that's noted in the inspector's report. So things like that, you know, you want, they're flags or there's things that the buyer, that the inspector will note for the buyer, but how you negotiate that is all up to you and how you have a working relationship with your buyer. It may, a better solution to something like that would be to ask for the home warranty to cover the buyer for the next year. And that's something that the seller may want to include or the listing agent may want to include based on the findings that came out on the inspection. So again, those are ways to prevent remorse or buyers from backing out just by pre-negotiating, asking for a credit rather than repairs, and helping the client understand what to expect during that period of time. Other ways to prevent remorse or deals from canceling is reassuring and communicating with the buyer throughout that period of time. It's usually week two or week three of the transaction. Your role as an agent is to reassure your client and to keep them informed. After the contract has been approved, reinforce their decision personally and sincerely throughout the remainder of the sales process. Remind them that this is such an awesome house, that the reasons why they decided to choose this house over the other one. Remind them of that, because things are going to come up that are outside of your control, and remind them of the importance of why they selected this house in the first place. And if it sincerely is not the right house for them, or there has been another house that's come on the market that was better during that inspection period, by all means, back them out. But past the inspection period, once they've passed that threshold, remind them of why they love this home. Make sure you send them an email that just shows your excitement and enthusiasm, or that reinforces why they're moving forward and that they understand the next step in the process. A lot of real estate agents basically get through the inspection and then they just go on to the next transaction. When they need to spend more time in making sure the buyer has been in contact with the lender and has, do they have any questions? make sure that you're keeping in contact with them throughout the entire transaction, not just leaving them alone during that quiet, what we call the quiet period between week two and week four. The email strategy, you may have a couple emails that you've created that you can use. I've seen some really good ones that I've seen other top producers use. Our transaction coordinators use a very systematic email of how they communicate with those buyers throughout the week two and week three and week four and beyond. You may want to consider copying some of those emails that you see that are really good. Or maybe you want to have a transaction coordinator assist you. For a few hundred dollars, you can have a transaction coordinator help you with your transaction. They'll basically be responsible with communicating with the buyer, the escrow, the lender, and the inspector, and keep that deal together for you. So that's additional cost, but that might be an opportunity for you to enhance the communication flow that happens between you and your buyers. Other tips I'll leave you guys with is exposing your client to the seller's disclosure earlier on. Some of you wait too long to expose the client to the seller's disclosure, or you may throw it in at the very beginning, you know, when you're writing the transaction, have them sign that they've received it, but didn't remind them that they should really print that seller's disclosure out, refer to that during the inspection, that is their way to communicate with the seller is through that seller's disclosure, that they can read through the answers to the questions on the seller's disclosure and prepare questions that they may have for that seller that you can convey or communicate to the seller through email. A good email thread, it would be something like this. The seller or the buyer receives the seller's disclosure. I send them over a signed copy of the seller's disclosure, receipting that they received it. But then during the inspection period, I send them a copy of the inspection again, and the seller's disclosure again, and say, please print this out prior to meeting with the inspector, and prepare any questions you have for the seller. I then could take some of their questions, email them to the seller, or in our response, the Form 35R, I could prepare the questions that the buyer may have in a contractual way so that the buyer feels like I'm taking good care of them, that I'm negotiating on their behalf. Most of my buyers say to me after the transaction, I really felt like Rochelle did a good job at negotiating and looking after my well-being and not representing the seller but representing my interests. The reason why is because I use that. I'm not specifically pointing out things on the Form 17 or all I'm doing is communicating their concerns or their questions to the seller in a contract way or in an email. If you have questions on should I put this in the contract or should I email them, should I email the seller to get clarification, just come to me. I'd be happy to give you some advice on what should be put into a contract versus what should be just an email communication. Things like, how do I get my mailbox keys? Or it says that the roof is 5 years old. Do you know what kind of, is it two layers or is it one? Things like that can be done through an email rather than on a contract. However, if the inspector notes that the roof looks like it's the last of its life, but the sellers have disclosed in the Form 17 that it's only 7 or 8 years old, we may need some further clarification on that. So we may need to put that in writing or put that into the contract. And then also you may want to do a CMA, whether the property, especially with people that say, well, this is maybe not the right time for me to buy. You may want to run a CMA to determine whether the property is properly priced. The market may change slightly, and that may make them feel like they're not getting a good deal. But a good CMA can really show them that they are actually getting a good deal or a good property for the price that they're paying, even after the inspection. Some of the older homes I've helped buyers purchase, they find out that there's a lot of repairs, $5,000, $10,000, but when they see that the properties on the marketplace that are also older homes that are selling for $350 versus $320, there's $3,000 that they have to work with because of the comparables that are in the area. So by finding a property that may need a little bit of cosmetic maybe needs a new water heater that will run about $1,000, they're still getting a good deal because I've run a CMA. I've shown them the value with a good CMA. Make sure your earnest money is higher. Don't let buyers get away with just running low earnest money amounts. I've seen buyers get cold feet because they don't put enough skin in the game. Make sure your buyers are at least putting 1% or more down on the place. That will keep them tied to the property. And make sure that things that are you're asking for in the inspection really would come up on appraisals. And if you're not going to get the seller to do a lot of the repairs, you may want to consider doing a home warranty or asking the seller to provide a home warranty. And that will sometimes help in your negotiations to keep the deal together. So hopefully this was helpful for you guys. If you have been a one-offs, that I hear a lot of one-offs that happen, especially during the holidays, where things happen, job loss happens, divorces happen. There's a lot of craziness also. Some things you can't control. No question is a dumb question for me when it comes to keeping the deals together. It's really near and dear to my heart. So have a great week this week. There's still a lot of people out there buying and still very limited inventory in most of our areas. So if you have any specific questions or just want to bounce some ideas, I had one of the agents come in today and just pick my brain for a half an hour on some ways to help his clients find properties. I'm open to spending more time with you if you need some help with doing your business plan or if you're struggling with some of these key points we've been talking about on the conference calls. So I'll talk to you guys soon and have a great rest of the week. Bye-bye.